Blog Talk Radio.
As difficult to fathom, America is now catching up with the rest of the world. With last week's horrific killings at Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina, America barely blinks when mosques are blown up in distant lands or Christians are burned alive as they huddle together seeking safety in war-torn nations. Now, in this country, the carnage has moved from schools, school buildings, to Bible study classes in the basement of historic black Southern churches. The Honorable Reverend Clemente Pinckney will be buried tomorrow and eulogized by President Barack Obama. The other eight victims will be buried in the days to come. The services will be huge and no doubt televised. The tears will flow, and the ultimate question, why, will be asked. And in the wake of last week's massacre remains a demented 21-year-old soldier of death who still waves his Confederate flag in his twisted mind, white, young, hateful, and a gun in his hand, a deadly combination. Today, we will explore the challenges and opportunities that America faces as it wrestles with the contingency of dissonance that just cannot embrace a globally connected and multicultural nation. As we celebrate the Supreme Court's ruling today, we'll also talk about this new ruling that happened today that upholds the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare. Hello, this is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, this is Carol Copeland Thomas. Thanks so much for listening. We had some technical difficulties and then had to start this show over again, but I believe we are now up and running. We certainly thank you for listening, and either listening live or listening as an archive. There's a lot of news out there. It's all related to the work that I do in diversity, empowerment, and leadership. I don't know where to start, but I do want to pick up on the conversation we had last week as we were just trying to unpack the horror of what had happened in Charleston, South Carolina, with the killing, the execution, the massacre of nine innocent people who were simply at Bible study, trying to listen to the Word, hear the Word, dissect the Word, and do it in a very traditional manner that is just so common to all people, not just African Americans, but all people who worship in some kind of manner. I want to first read off the names of those, and you can see their pictures. All of their pictures are at my website at tellcarol.com. You can certainly go there, go to the blog section, and see who these individuals are. See their beauty in the pictures that are shown, and you can certainly learn more about them through the news media and other outlets. But I have them listed in the order in which they appear. First is the librarian who was first recognized and identified along with the pastor. This is Cynthia Hurd. She is 54 years old. Then there is the Honorable Reverend Clementa Pinckney, 41 years old, a state senator, and also the pastor of Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church. Then there is Sharonda Singleton, 45 years old, a athlete, a coach, and also a very strong faith-based member of that church. Then we have Reverend Daniel Simmons, 74 years old, who I believe was taken to the hospital and then died when he got to the hospital. Then there is DePayne Doctor, 49 years young. Then Tawanza Sanders, 26 years old, was there with relatives, a recent college graduate working as a barber, starting his life, and was at the right place, just at the wrong time. Then there's Myra Thompson, who I believe is my sorority sister, a member of Delta Sigma Theta sorority, 59 years old, and I believe also a cousin of friends of mine. And I'm sure that they are mourning her loss. There are lots of connections that I'll share with you as we talk about these brave people who were all sadly blown into the kingdom last week. The next person on the list is Ethel Lance, 70 years old, and then the oldest member of this group of nine angels, Susie Jackson, 87 years old. So from 26 through 87 years old, because of one person who decided to act on his mind, act in a manner that he thought was correct and proper, trying to start what we now realize he was trying to start was a race war. And unfortunately, as a result of that, these people are now gone. Sadness and pain just don't begin to describe my thoughts and feelings. And like many people, I'm sure that we've all been glued to the television set. We've learned an awful lot about all nine of these people. The focus clearly has been on the minister, just because he was the shepherd of the flock, and was just a very principled man, elegantly spoken, and a man of action, and certainly a man of great stature, not only in the state legislature, but certainly in the AME church. I speak out for these individuals, and the personal connection that I is that they were all members of my connectional church. The African Methodist Episcopal Church is 2.5 million strong. It goes back to 1787, when a group of black people were worshiping, I believe, in the balcony of St. George AME Church in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Some of them had gone down to pray at the altar and were asked to get up and to leave the altar, because that particular church at that time, they were tightening up their racial restrictions. These were all free people, as far as I know. I know that Richard Allen was an ex-slave who had bought his freedom, but they were asked to leave the altar. That then turned into their decision to leave the church and start a church that then became a number of different churches, including the African Methodist Episcopal Church. It's a very interesting history in terms of how that one action to leave St. George then became the basis of several denominations that formed, including my denominations, which was ultimately head by Richard Allen. Richard Allen was the first consecrated bishop in our church, in the African Methodist Episcopal Church, and in 1816, so again from 1787 to 1816, it took that amount of time for a building to be purchased. It's now 6th and Lombard, Mother Bethel AME Church, which is the oldest continuously owned and occupied space owned by black people from a church perspective in the United States. So we have Mother Bethel AME Church in Philadelphia, which started the AME Church. In that time period, slavery was in place, and so it was, in many cases, illegal to start churches in the South. So Emmanuel, their origins go back to that time period. Denmark Vesey, I know that name has been brought forward. He was one of the co-founders of Emmanuel AME Church. And as a result of his actions trying to free slaves, the whole movement of moving the church forward in Charleston, South Carolina, was completely outlawed. And so then you had a number of churches that were underground, which, in fact, Emmanuel had to go underground. Church was burned to the ground, and it went underground until the Civil War ended. So that is a sister church with a very interesting history, where Mother Bethel AME Church was allowed to continue on because Pennsylvania remained free, it remained part of the Union, and so the church activities moved forward. Finally, after the Civil War, Emmanuel AME Church was allowed to operate in the open along with all of the other churches in the South. And my family, my church family's roots are in Georgia, so very similar history, whereas my uncles were worshiping secretly And we're worshiping very carefully, should I say, just because of the sign of the times. But ultimately, Emmanuel, the other churches in the South, became fully recognized as part of the African Methodist Episcopal Church, of which we now have thousands of churches all over the world, literally including India, which I've talked about earlier. So the connections are very strong, and the historical connections are extremely significant. So Mother Emmanuel is a very important church in the history of Charleston and a very important church in the history of the AME Church. Reverend Norville Golf, who is a presiding elder in our church, is also the presiding elder of Emmanuel. And it's my knowledge, I have to confirm this, but it's my knowledge that Reverend Golf was having his what we call quarterly conference. This is a meeting that's held four times a year all over the Connectional Church that is administered and overseen by what we call presiding elders. We have bishops in our church, we have presiding elders, and we have pastors. And so he's like the middle manager. And his mid-level, his quarterly meeting was being held at Emmanuel, literally maybe 2 hours before the Bible study started. And typically that's what happens. You have a quarterly conference in a church, and in many of our churches, the Wednesday time period is reserved for either prayer meeting or Bible study or some kind of midweek meeting. Prior to that, they had the business meeting, the quarterly conference, that was overseen by Reverend Norville Golf. I know Reverend Golf because he was a pastor here in the Connecticut area before he moved to become a minister in Western New York, and then ultimately was transferred to the 7th Episcopal District, South Carolina, and this church was one of his charges. So these are people I know. This is not just something I'm reading about in the newspaper, and that's what makes it so difficult to really comprehend. There are just many other connections that go on. So here we have this case, and we have this situation where the Dylan Storm Roof is his name, 21 years old. He's written what he calls a manifesto that now has shown up on websites, hate websites with organizations that are espousing takeovers and those kind of activities. And he thought he wanted to begin a race war. That's basically what he thought. In the midst of our country that is moving forward in terms of diversity, multiculturalism, leadership activity, and definitely the global connection that we have to the world. And that's what I want to really hone on, is that sadly, we have so much to really focus on. We have so many things that we need to focus on. And then we have a group of people, I'm really believing it's a minority group of people, just a small number of individuals, who don't want the country to move forward. They are afraid. They see their place in society as one that is being threatened, where their level of entitlement is coming into question because of those individuals who don't look like them, who they feel are threatening their very existence. That's what I have to sort of gather from this person who did so much carnage. When you think about the words that the killer, I don't even want to mention his name because it's just so vile. When you think about the killer, the words that he used as he was killing and executing people, and he shot people multiple times, from what the report, police report has said. And then he said, according to the cousin of Reverend Pinckney, who's been on television as a guest, he said, "You're raping our women. You're taking over. You have to go." And with that kind of mentality, he proceeded to finish the job. And he unfortunately was successful in everybody he shot. He killed everybody. And he left some people alive so that they could tell the story. I can't even imagine kind of brazen, demonic behavior, but it happened. But America is going to move forward anyway. You see, even at Emmanuel AME yesterday, Wednesday, they still had prayer meeting. they will probably have church service on Sunday, as they had church service last Sunday, and Reverend Goff, Presiding Elder Goff, delivered the sermon. Tomorrow, the funerals will begin, first with Reverend Pinckney. He'll be buried, I think, at Emmanuel. I'm not sure of the location. We'll hear about that later on. It's going to be a very large funeral. There will be metal detectors because President Obama is going to deliver the eulogy. So with that will be heightened security. What a fitting person to deliver the eulogy of a very royal, should I say, states person who died valiantly in his service to God. There will be other funerals, 8 more funerals that will take place in the days ahead, in the coming days, with the other 8 individuals who passed away. And now, because of this horrific incident, not only is America moving forward, but finally decisions and actions are taking place with the Confederate flag. Every time I see the Confederate flag, I just cringe, and I'm looking at it right now because I'm reporting on it, and I have a visceral effect to it. I have a visceral historic effect to the significance and the damage of that particular flag and what it means. But fortunately, what was done for evil, what one 21-year-old wanted to do as he wanted to start a race war, has transformed into a movement where maybe our country is going to move forward finally. You see, there's going to be a discussion and a debate in the South Carolina state legislature where they're going to debate removing the Confederate flag altogether from the Confederate monument that stands in the Capitol grounds in South Carolina. They'll begin to debate that. I'm sure once they do that, they will drape the Honorable Pinckney's chair in black, as they did in church and as they did in the state legislature last week when his death was announced. In Alabama, yesterday, the flags that were on the Capitol grounds were removed, direct result of this heinous crime. In Mississippi, the Confederate rebel flag, you can go to my website and find out more about the history of this flag. This is the rebel flag that represented the Northern Virginia military outfit during the Civil War. But it's been adopted now for other reasons tied in with rebellion and, I think, discrimination and hatred. But that flag is embedded in the state flag of Mississippi. They are now determining whether that's going to be removed. I do believe it should be removed. The Confederate component of the Georgia flag was removed some time ago, so that, fortunately, has been done. But then you have license plates, you have T-shirts, and you have this emblem that just is everywhere when you look at merchandise that's being sold. But America's moving forward because finally, corporate America has stood up and said, no, we can't participate in this kind of action. So Walmart and Sears and Amazon.com announced 2 days ago that they were no longer going to sell any Confederate flag merchandise that they currently are stocking inventory-wise. Yes, the sales went up dramatically within minutes of that announcement. I'm sure they probably sold through all their inventory, but at least going forward, at least when we're looking at that particular flag and how it's being merchandised through license plates, et cetera, it'll be more difficult to purchase it with mainstream stores. Yes, you'll be able to purchase it online, but at least with these mainstream stores, they have stood up and they've said, no, we won't participate in that kind of action. And that's a good thing. That's a step in the right direction. I have created on my YouTube channel the first of a series of commentaries that I'm making. So you can go to Carol Copeland Thomas on YouTube, and you'll get to my channel, and you'll be able to listen and watch. Also on my blog at tellcarole.com, TellCarole, you can go and read my commentary on Take the Confederate Flag Down. And there will be other commentaries, including one that I have created about the three cancers of America: race, guns, and I'm just blanking out on the other one, but three different ones that I've shared, and I will post that in the next couple of days. That you can go to that talks about just the significance of where we are and where our country needs to go in terms of the violence that's taking place, the inordinate violence that's taking place, and how it relates to guns. We do have a number of gun laws on the books. Nobody will refute that. But when I think about how guns are being used in inner city areas, in urban populations, and with these lone wolves who are quietly and secretly planning how they're going to do heinous acts, whether they're in school buildings or churches or God knows where else they will actually end up. It's just horrific in terms of what's taking place. With this particular case that took place last week, there's a loose connection to religion, and I say loose connection because the killer's main focus was to go into an area and kill a concentrated level of black people. That's what he was primarily focused on. The side component was the fact that he chose a historic city, Charleston being a very historic city in this country, but certainly in his state of South Carolina, and where he knew that there would be a concentrated number of black people. He was in the room for almost an hour worshiping with them as Bible study was going on. So there was a clear motive in terms of what he was doing. So the religious piece is an add-on to the racial element and the racial component, and that's just seriously wrong and just very, very sad. We need some kind of gun reformation, some kind of gun transformation in this country. There's a serious need for it. When you look at the shootings that have taken place, more than 20 since President Obama has been in office, more than 50, I believe, in the last 10 to 15 years. Just serious, serious needs. And when you look at America being a developed country, we have more gun incidences like this, the shootings that take place, than any of the other industrialized nations. We lead the team on that. That's the significance of it, the horror of it in terms of that. But going along with where we are, it's a matter of the importance of us staying focused as a country, having the race discussions that we definitely need to have, having real serious change, implementable change and action that needs to take place in Congress, in state houses around the United States, so that gun laws will be tightly restricted and enforced, coupled with educational programs, training programs, and just a continuous proliferation of dialogue so that our country will understand that each one of us matters, that everybody matters, and it's just so important and relevant for us to build a safe country that limits the use of guns, that never allows people to have AK-47s and military armament that will do even more damage to people. So the gun laws need to change. The gun lobbyists, including the National Rifle Association, they've got to finally change their tune. They are contributing to what's taking place. I know that their whole stand is guns are killed, people kill people, guns don't kill people, just a ludicrous argument, totally ludicrous. So there has to be a shift with lobbying groups like the National Rifle Association and others so that this problem that we have in this country will be minimized so that America will continue to move forward. Well, we saw today with the Supreme Court and the Affordable Act that they ruled in favor of. They upheld that ruling. And what it was all about were the subsidies that were being threatened to be removed from some states, not Massachusetts, because our process is done differently through our state. But other states would have literally had people thrown off the rolls, the state insurance rolls, because the subsidies, had they made a different ruling today, would have been removed and eliminated. And that just would have been just huge chaos literally all over the country. The Affordable Care Act has been in effect since 2010. And now, because it's been upheld, the subsidies have been upheld, it will continue going forward. And I would suggest that those who are opposed to it suck it up and get used to it, because now the Supreme Court has upheld the ruling. Chief Justice John Roberts, Anthony Kennedy, four other justices ruled in favor of the Affordable Care Act and the subsidies, and that was opposed to Justice Antonin Scalia, Clarence Thomas, and Samuel Alito. We can always count on them being on the other side and being for an America that looks like it did in 1945, maybe, or 40 or 53. They're always going to vote wrong, and they're not going to vote in favor of this. But I'm very, very pleased with Justice John Roberts. He's done this before. And when I look at the fact that now twice this Affordable Care Act has been upheld, that's really good news and ties in with my theme today, because America is moving forward. I shudder to think that there will be other things that will take place, that will happen, that will hurt people. It's going to happen. I'm so sad that more lives will be lost because demented people who are hateful, who want to see the clock turn backward 50 years, they're going to do their best to move in that direction. But with more Supreme Court rulings, we're all waiting to see how they're going to rule on same-sex marriage. That will take place between now and Tuesday, because everything has to be wrapped up as their term ends on Tuesday, June 30th. So we'll obviously have more commentary about that with our next show. But through it all, we're going to move forward. We're going to make it. I think about the words that our president gave this morning as he was commenting on the Affordable Care Act. He talked about the various laws. There have been 50 bills introduced in Congress to repeal the Affordable Care Act, and none of them have moved forward. Now they're going to be completely stopped when you look at what the Supreme Court ruled on today. It doesn't mean that the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare as people call it, will not be improved in some kind of way. It will be approved. It will be improved in times to come. But since it has been in effect since 2010, 5 years, so many people have now relied on it. Just because I am a small business owner and self-employed, it has benefited me and reduced my health care bills, which were very high before it went into effect. And the thing I liked about what President Obama said today, he said, that's not just in terms of repealing it, that's not what America does. We move forward. And hats off to that. He also said it's working and it's here to stay and it's a good day for America. So tomorrow he'll go and he'll deliver the eulogy for a very great minister who has come and gone. There will be other things we'll have to wrestle with, but ultimately America is moving forward. And we know through proper education and through dialogue and guidance and trying to turn people around from their hateful ways, ultimately things will continue to improve in this great land that we live in. And we know that you will be a significant factor in how we move together collectively as a country. This is Carol Copeland Thomas. I hope you've enjoyed the show, and we'll get back to you next week, I'm sure, talking about what the Supreme Court does next with same-sex marriage. Have a great week or weekend. We'll talk to you soon.